Welcome to An Evening with Nirvana, a podcast where I talk to a variety of guests from the Doom community about level design, map creation, and other facets of game development. Today I'm talking to Obsidian, host of the Abyssal Speed Mapping Sessions, the Mayhem Community Project series, as well as a number of other community projects, creator of Maskum Zol, Countdown to Extinction, and Candlemass, to name just a few of their projects over the years. Welcome to the podcast, Obsidian. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. It's a bit blooming hot over where I am, but I'm doing my best to stay out of the weather, so.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Where I am, the weather just does whatever it wants, so it's...
Yeah, it's been doing that a bit here. It's kind of settled into summertime, though.
Yeah. So, it was supposed to be, like, 30 Celsius yesterday, and then it randomly decided it was going to be, like, 22 out of nowhere, and then it dropped to 15, so...
Oh, jeez, all over the place.
You just never know.
Yeah, we were getting some freak showers for a decent while. Just like, the day is just perfectly sunny, and then all of a sudden,
yeah, that sounds
absolute torrent. Very wild.
Yeah, it's similar.
That's New Zealand for you. Anyway, yes, thanks for having me on, and Countdown to Extinction. What a blast from the past that one is.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't expect to hear that name again.
Yeah, a lot of people are like, I don't even remember what I was doing for this one, because I'll bring up some really old thing.
Yeah, I remember that one in particular. That was me doing one hour speed match. Yeah, that was it. I was just doing a bunch of those for fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then, somehow I got noticed. Someone compared it to Demon Fear, which, you know, cool, but no, not nearly as good.
Well, we'll get to all of this later. We got to start with the mundane question first, which is, how did you first get into Doom?
Ooh, interesting question. I got into Doom when I was quite young. I was living out in a township, like very far out in the country, so no internet or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was about, I want to say 7, 8, something like that, I got to go on a friend's computer, and they had Doom 2 Hell on Earth on there. No speakers, so I couldn't hear anything of what was going on. But that's how I first got into it. And I spent years afterwards just sort of dreaming up levels in my head for it, because, you know, at the time I didn't know you could actually do that. And from there, yeah, we moved to the town, I got internet access, and in 2011, I actually figured out that, holy cow, you can actually make things for Doom.
Wow.
And that's about when I started.
Yeah, I think the thread of, I went to a friend's house, and they had Doom on their computer, is very common for how people got into it for some reason.
Yeah, tale as old as time, that.
Yeah. And do you remember, like, which... So this was original Doom, I'm assuming.
Doom 2 Hell on Earth.
That was Doom 2, sorry. And do you remember, like, which of the IWODs sort of resonated with you initially? Like, did you get into Final Doom fairly early, or did you play that much later, or...?
Yeah, that one, I didn't get to play any of the other Doom stuff for quite a few years afterwards, because, like, it's a friend's computer and we moved away, and I didn't get to have Doom on the family computer, but yeah, Doom 2 is the one that's always kind of stuck with me, and then from there I played Ultimate Doom, Final Doom, always like Plutonia, and then the other stuff I can sort of take or leave, but Doom 2 is the original one for me.
Mm-hmm. So Doom 2 was the original, but Plutonia definitely the...
Plutonia's got a certain vibe to it that I quite enjoy. It's got good texture work going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, playing your stuff, I definitely feel like Plutonia is closer gameplay-wise than any of the IWODs, I would say. The evil laugh may give people some indication of
what a compliment! But no, that's totally fair.
Yeah. And so you talked about how you dreamed up making maps, and then you said 2011 was when you got into mapping? Was that sort of when you started making custom stuff?
Yeah, about then. Before then, like, I had kind of limited, like, interaction with Doom. I was doing some other things at the time. And then on a forum, I came across a user by the name of... Actually, he's on Doom World now. He's a guy called
A guy called what, sorry?
And for some reason, his name's Crunchynut.
Okay.
On Doom World. Crunchynut 44 or something like that? He made some pretty cool maps. I don't think he maps so much nowadays, but he's got some proper mapping chops. And we started talking about Doom for some reason. This might have been back in like 2009, 10, something like that. Maybe 10, 11. And he talked to me about a project that he'd worked on, and he sent me a copy. And yeah, I started playing it. That was my first custom mod. It was a map set called Demon's Paradise.
Wow.
And after that, I just started getting into more custom content, figured out how to make it myself, and then I joined Doomworld in 2012 when the world ended.
I think that's around when I joined as well, actually, but I did not interact with the forums for years and years, to be honest. I just sort of lurked in the background.
I shouldn't have interacted with the forums. I was not very good at socializing. Too many exclamation marks and stuff like that.
Oh, well, you know. I mean, I feel like if I could go back and purge my early internet self, I probably would, you know. I think when you're a teenager and you're going on the internet, some things happen.
Yeah, I
Facebook,
don't think about it too
early
much
Facebook.
nowadays. Oh yeah, there are worse places to purge yourself of that sort of immaturity than Doomworld.
Exactly.
Definitely. And yeah, like I've learned things as I go along, and you know, like I just view that sort of part, that part of my life as just, you know, part of the learning process.
Exactly.
So I don't mind it too much. And I'd like to hope that no one's going to try and dig it up on me, because that person is completely different to the person I am now. I'm
Please,
adamant on that
please don't
fact.
go and try to dox a young Obsidian.
Yeah. He's a stupid little boy. Leave him alone.
So your first map on the Doom Wiki, Corridors of Atrocity, is your interpretation of Doom 2 Map 28.
Yes.
So was this your first experience with map making? Do you remember any particular challenges you had with that map?
That one in particular was not my first Doom map that I made. The first Doom map I made was a it was this big marble tomb sort of thing that for some reason used every single Doom monster. But when I went to actually look back at the map, it turned out that yeah, there was some stuff that happened in between like then and now, and the files become corrupted, so I don't have it anymore. And Corridors of Atrocity is, for all intents and purposes, the first map that I have. That is a motorbike driving by very fast.
Wow, yeah.
I'm sure that person isn't compensating for anything at all.
Oh,
Hopefully that wasn't audible.
it was audible, yeah. This guy, he wanted it to be audible and he got his wish.
Yeah, congratulations, you're famous for the wrong reasons. But yes, Corridors of Atrocity, yeah, that was a stab at making a sort of a Map 28 sort of deal. That was for the Doom 2 in Name Only project. And people rightfully pointed out that it wasn't amazing, and so I released, which is totally fair.
Well, I don't know. I played through a bit of it and I didn't think it was like particularly low quality for like an early map, honestly.
Yeah, but it's okay. It's got its problems. It's possible that like maybe the people giving feedback were a little harsh on a first timer, who knows? But I don't begrudge them any, because you know, I've only gotten better since then.
Well, there you go. It helped mold you into the map you are today, that feedback.
As I'd say it would. I'd say it did, rather. Words, how do you
So, cadaver, or use this word, cadaveric incubator of endoparasites.
Cadaveric incubator into parasites. That one was that was fun to work on. That was one of my first projects where I went a bit heavy on the dehack stuff. And the name itself comes from a song by a band called Carcass. I was a big fan of them at the time. Still kind of am, just don't listen to them as much. And yeah, I remember having a lot of fun with that. Very clunky in retrospect, but that's the same with every sort of project people make. You know, you look back and you go, geez Louise. But I had fun making that one. I distinctly remember enjoying myself while I was creating that.
Well, it's another like your early works, and it's like, but I think it's like a really good example of the work you put into creating atmosphere. A lot of your mods tend to like go the extra mile in that regard, I think. And I was curious
I think
what
that
your influences were at the time in terms of games.
In terms of games, oh, hold on, the screen fell asleep. I was gonna say the reason I lean on atmosphere gameplay. In terms of, if we're talking like outside of Doom,
Yep, games outside of Doom.
interesting, because like I don't think I was ever like all that influenced by games outside of Doom, because I didn't actually get to play too many games growing up.
Oh,
Like
interesting.
a lot of my inspirations come from inside the Doom community. In the case of that particular map, I think part of it would have been influenced by the work of Moldy, Ossaria Karras, because yeah, his work has always been just a cut above some of the other stuff around there. There's also Eternal, who puts in some good work when it comes to like building atmosphere and their maps.
Yep.
And yeah, in the case of Cadaver.1 in particular, I was somewhat influenced by 32-inch Nails.
Oh, yep.
Yeah. You familiar with that one?
I am, actually, yeah. I have...
very good map set, very good atmosphere, and you wouldn't guess it was made with a restriction. Not at all.
Right, yeah. I do remember that one, actually. With regards to Cadaver, you utilize, like, ambient sounds, like running water. You have this eerie computer beeping sound effect, and I ended up playing it with the music off, like I turned the music off, and really enjoyed that experience of just having the ambient noise. But the things like ambient sounds that you feel are underutilized in Doom mods that you'd like to see more?
In terms of sound design in general, I think there's that, like a very good example of what you can do with like just ambient sounds in this particular case, Nihility, Infinite Teeth. Excellent map set with no music whatsoever. It relies solely on the ambient noisemakers scattered throughout each map. And that's a good start. I think that's something very cool. But I think there's also stuff you can do with MIDI in general that just to make less musically inclined tracks and more ambient inclined tracks. Yeah. There's a little bit of that around, but not a whole lot, and I would love to see it more.
Yeah, I agree. Because, I mean, I played, like, this one was from... Was this WOD from 2011, 2012, something like that? It's an old WOD, but I feel like I still haven't seen that much use of ambient noise, especially in Boom WODs and stuff. Maybe more in Z-Doom stuff, but...
Z-Doom has more of an aspect of control, which makes it a lot easier to make.
Yeah, much
easier. I remember talking with Essel when she was... Was it Essel? I was talking with someone who wants to do ambient sounds. And they mentioned that the looping, you can't really make it seamless in non-Z-Doom ports. Because the sounds can overlap sometimes, and there's also sort of like ticks and the like. Very difficult to get those sorts of ambient sound makers working in a way that feels nice. Sometimes you just do it and hang the consequences, like I did. But if you can get it sounding nice, then, you know, it's always preferable.
Well, yeah, I guess hopefully MBF21 introduces like a sound info equivalent. I think it is being worked on.
Interesting.
And then for Boom, well, I mean, it wouldn't be Boom, but you know, Boom-ish WODs.
Yeah. Stuff for DSDA Doom and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or Eternity even. I need to play around Eternity more.
Yeah, perhaps. when you made Obsidian's 30-minute maps, was that an exercise for you in terms of wanting to get better at mapping, or is it something you just sort of wanted to do for fun?
Oh, wow. We really are reaching into the vaults. That one was... at the time, I was making random 30-minute maps on Doomworld, and I just decided to like collect them together and make a map to finish it off. A fairly simple sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And do you generally find speed mapping to be like a useful thing to you in terms of like, do you use it just to sort of like put out ideas you might not want to use for like another set, or is it generally like a way to sort of get your mapping juices flowing kind of thing?
I would say that it helps with the mapping juices, because there was a good period of time over the last few years where the only mapping I did was through the Abyssal Speed Mapping Sessions, or ASS for short. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't have that sort of engagement, it's possible I would have just completely fallen off the wagon.
Right.
As it stands, I am slowly and surely mapping again and making stuff. So, you know, keep an eye out for next year.
I will.
But, like in terms of speed maps, I imagine it's improved some of my technique to some degree. But even to this day, I still find myself running low on time. So no matter how long you've been doing it, you can always get better.
I think some people are just naturally inclined towards being able to put shapes together in a Doom map very quickly and have it turn into something.
I've never been that sort of person. I've always just done the stream of consciousness sort of mapping. You know, you make it up as you go along. It's like freeform jazz, I like to say.
Yeah, you can sort of... I mean, there are a lot of different ways to to build a map, I think. I
Yeah.
think people
Like
panic a
the
little bit
Rubik's
when they
Way.
can't do one in particular.
I always remember having a chuckle. There was a video by Rubik's of his mapping process, and it looked horrible because what he was doing was just drawing line diffs in the void and joining them up later.
Yeah, I
And I
think it
just couldn't
was.
imagine working like that.
Oh,
Oh, jeez.
I've seen that video. I think it's for the womb, right? It's a video of him making the
It
womb.
might have been earlier, but I could be wrong.
Oh, well, I've definitely seen a video of him making a section of the womb, and
Yeah.
he does exactly what you're saying, where he just
Yeah.
draws
For
a bunch
those
of
of you not in the know, that's a map
disparate
from
lines.
Sunlust.
Yeah, it's
Context.
well. Come on, if they're listening to this podcast, they haven't played Sunless, that's on them, I feel
Yeah.
like.
Fair enough, fair enough.
But what did I have here? I had this is I think this might be another bit of a blast from the past, really. Inertia. You created this.
Wow, yeah, that
Yeah.
one.
Just to
Very
utilize wood
uncomfortable map to
textures,
play.
I believe, was the main
Oh
reason
yeah,
behind
that
it.
map has got wood for days.
I guess I was wondering, like, if this interest in, like, focusing on a specific set of textures was partially what influenced, like, the theming for the Abyssal sessions later.
In terms of that, I would say that the sessions were, I wouldn't say they were, influenced by my own sort of experience. This is more so just the stuff that came before. Like there was the Tango TV speedrun sessions, which ended a little while before the Abyssal one started, but there was also the original Doomworld speed mapping sessions. And I took some cues from those as well in terms of themes. The themes were a little loose at the start, I seem to recall. Like there was, I think it was like fortress behind a waterfall was one of the themes. Very, very sort of, open to interpretation. And they eventually got a little bit tighter as time went on. But I don't think I had any intention of like, excuse me. I don't think I had any intention of like having that focus on particular texture set at the time. As for inertia, blooming heck, that yeah, ages ago that one.
Well, you
I'm
have a
trying to
lot of
think of
maps
what.
from that period.
I've been busy. It's been literal 10 years.
It's
I do love
crazy.
how I can remember quite a few of the minutiae for when I was making those sorts of things though. Like you were talking about Countdown to Extinction earlier, and I imagine we'll be talking about that a bit more. But I actually remember making one of the maps for it while I was in a friend's radio show. Like that memory sticks with me, and that always gives me a smile.
Well, are you mapping right now? Is that
Oh
what's happening?
no. I'm terrible
So what made you want to lead the Abyssal sessions in the first place? And what were your sort of main goals to set it apart from other community projects at the time?
multitasking. The Abyssal speedrunning sessions, honestly, I started them because I was hold on, I'm gonna need to go back in time a little bit. So I was reading through all forum drama in regards to New Doom, and I saw a mention of a forum called the Abyss, because that's where some of the New Doom refugees were going. So I looked it up, and it was basically just like a good dozen people there keeping the lights on, and I decided to just join up and say hello and, check out how things were going. And I looked at their mapping forum, and there had not been movement on there in potentially years. And I was thinking, you know what? This is a cool project. And like they were doing a, I think it was like, I think they were doing a, like a community project for the Abyss. And it never quite got off the ground. So what I thought what I'd do is I would make a little speed mapping session for the folks on the Abyss. I've always insisted over the years that the acronym for Abyssal Speed Mapping Session was a coincidence, but it actually was. And no one will believe me now because I've said it so much. But yeah, I thought Abyssal Speed Mapping Session sounded cool. And that's what I went with. So yeah, I
Interesting.
had the first session was me, Osiris Kalev, a fellow from the Abyss, Gifty, who is on Doomworld, I believe, did Smooth Doom and stuff like that. So there was me, Osiris, Gifty, and then a friend of mine, General Rainbow Bacon,
I'm familiar.
who I've done quite a bit of speed mapping with him over the years. Like we've done some tandem stuff, and like of course, he and I have both been in the sessions. And yeah, very first session, December 2013. We were doing it on Skype. I remember it solely because there's a bit where I got to quote a bloomin' CNN's video, and I thought pinnacle of comedy. We had a good time, and people wanted to see it continue. And so, yeah, I continued it. I cross-posted it to Doomworld, and all of a sudden it started getting attention. It helped that, like I said, the Tango TV speed map musicians had just stopped, but I wasn't trying to replace them. I was literally just doing this because I wanted to try and get these folks to map again, and it just kind of turned into a monster.
Yeah, I think my familiarity with General Rainbow Bacon is map 15 of Slaughterfest 2012.
Yes, he was quite involved in that once upon a time. What is happening with Slaughterfest these days? I need to ask. I'm not mapping for it because that's not my cup of tea, but we're interested in finding out what actually happened with it.
Very, very dead, I believe. But
exceedingly dead, eh?
It has, you know, Hardfest came out. Maybe that'll continue. That seems to be the spiritual successor, I think, in my eyes.
Ah, yeah, that's good.
I nearly considered running Slaughterfest, actually, but time did not allow.
Yeah, you always have to make sure that, like, you are prioritizing the... It's why I ended up stopping the Abyssal Spear Movie sessions, because there is stuff going on my... and I needed to get rid of at least one of the things that might distract me from it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame, but I think, you know, the sessions were going on for so long, and I think they had a good run of things, and they've hopefully inspired people to make sessions of their own.
Yeah.
I'm not sad about it. I'm not sad about its passing.
You've moved into acceptance.
Yeah.
I was sort of curious what the challenges of running a community project back, like when you first started, were, like running it through Skype and stuff, compared to today.
Honestly, the calls themselves, like, there was a bit of difficulty in coordinating them, which obviously got easier when Discord showed up on the scene, but the calls themselves were just quite fun. You know, it was a lot of people just cracking jokes for the most part. And of course you had people like contributing outside of the calls themselves. So it wasn't too strenuous. The hard yards come when you have to compile all the work later.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
What were you sort of trying to do you think, to set Abyssal apart when you first had that initial goal for it?
I wasn't really thinking of anything, honestly. It was just a thing that people could do that was fun. I don't know if it isn't terribly different from the sessions that come before it and the sessions that come after. There was some inspiration taken from, like I said, Tango TV, the Doomworld speed mapping sessions, and so I sort of took some of the rules that those took onto themselves and then sort of merged them together to make, you know, a decent sort of playing experience, but yeah, apart from that, it's just an excuse to have fun, really. You know, that's all it ever was. No lofty ambitions for it.
Right. And did you say that you basically just got too busy for it, had to prioritize other things? Is that why you decided to stop?
Yeah, unfortunately. Like, this year has been a very, very busy one. I've been studying. Mm-hmm. I've been studying, yeah, the first year of a 4-year course. So some changes have had to be made because I'm also running a couple of other projects, and at current, I can't just stop those ones. I have a duty to continue those for the community, and so those ones I have to sort of keep going. But that one, theoretically, they could have kept going, but for one, ending on 69 just was just too amusing to pass up, and two, it's never truly going to die or anything like that. So long as people who are inspired by it continue to do their own stuff, it's always going to be around.
Mm-hmm.
Names come and go, but the spirit is eternal.
It's true.
We see that with Pineapple's speed mapping sessions, Pineapple Under the Sea, I believe they're called. That one's reaching. Yeah. I know that acronym was definitely not a coincidence. But from what I understand, that those sessions are doing quite well. Have you had Blue Pineapple on here yet?
No, I haven't yet.
Yeah. Could be some consideration for the future, you know, but yeah, I'm glad to see that happening, and I do hope that more sessions pop up.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool, I think that's a helicopter going overhead. Apologies.
A motorbike, helicopter, it's all going. All forms of transport.
Yeah.
So, Knee Deep in Z-Doom was recently released by Essel, and it does a lot of emulation of Z-Doom features in vanilla. You actually did something similar with Operation Hydra back in the day.
I did, yes.
Do you remember the
Yes.
impetus for that project?
Honestly, the impetus was probably seeing the old knee-deep in Zedum threads and getting very inspired. Because when I first found out about that project, I was so sad that it had been cancelled. Because it was at the time, of course. Like, I remember reading about that. I was very much enamored with DHACT when I first joined the community. I still quite enjoy it, but I'm a bit more restrained about it these days. I just love the idea of being able to change these things about the game. I think that's something that is a little bit universal. It's why so many new mappers, gravitate towards Zedum, because you can add a whole, well, I guess GZedum now, because you can add all of these custom concepts unrestrained by the original vision of, the developers of Doom. And so that's why I've always liked that sort of dehackiness. And yeah, seeing knee deep in Zedum being done was something that was very, very inspiring to me. And so I think that gave a little bit of, yeah, a little bit of impetus towards Operation Hydra, as it were. That was a fun one to make. Very, very silly in concept. And not nearly as polished as knee deep in Zedum, but still fun.
Yeah, no,
Still
it's
fun.
cool. I mean, you can definitely see a lot of the same sort of ideas there. A lot of the sort of pixelated slope work and things
Yeah, I
like
didn't quite have the yeah I didn't quite have the technique down like Essel does, but I made up for it with sheer enthusiasm. I remember that one. That was definitely a I remember actually studying Tormentor 667 maps when I was making that to try and make sure I got the aesthetic as on point as possible.
Well, that's the person to emulate for sure. You're going for
Yeah,
ultimate Zedum, I
definitely.
guess.
You could say I was getting inspiration.
Yeah, maybe.
Enough
You've
that.
you've made a lot of single map projects over the years. Maps like I'm gonna mispronounce this probably. Is it Hugin and
Ah,
Werda?
yes. Manin, Werda, and Hugin. Those are all phrases from the Eragon books, because
Yeah.
I used to love those when I was younger. And yeah, I do have quite a few single map projects. That is a sort of thing. I don't really make map sets all that much because I run out of steam. I have the potential to run out of steam quite quickly. A couple of the later single map releases I've got, Candlemas and Rust in particular, are maps that I started and then just stopped and couldn't get inspiration for the longest time. So that is why I tend to gravitate towards the single maps, because like it's one big concept that I can hopefully hammer out instead of multiple ones that I have to turn into a cohesive whole. It's a bit tricky for me to make a map sets as opposed to single maps, because of course I was doing the I was trying to do the obligatory one man megawad sort of thing once upon a time,
Of course.
but I yeah as you can imagine, never quite got there. And now, like, this was many years ago, I want to say like 2014, 15, 16, the maps are nowhere near the standard I want them to be nowadays. So who knows if those will ever see the light of day, but
I like hearing about scraps, on the podcast. People's little things they got lying around because I want them to be released. Just release everything.
And just the act of talking about them might make a mapper, consider touching them up or something like that. That's kind of what happened with knee-deep in Zedum, really. Like, it was literally just Essel looking at these old map scraps and thinking, I think I could still make this work. And then she just went at it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you might also just have, the ability later on to like complete something much faster, like get to a concept more quickly than you did in the
That's
past. So,
true.
yeah.
That is very true. I should probably look at those old maps. Yeah, I've given it some consideration every now and again, but there's all sorts of other stuff going on.
There
It just falls back through the hole in my head. What the heck was that noise?
go. Obsidian Megaward coming 2023. Be ready.
I think I only ever made like 11 maps. Is that 14? Something like that. I don't know. Don't hold your breath for a megawatt. That's all I'll
I
say.
think hold your breath, that's what I'm saying. I'm calling you now. So while I probably wouldn't call you like a challenge mapper per se, a lot of your maps have low health and ammo and they don't shy away from difficult setups and like oppressive monster placement and stuff. There's almost like a survival horror feeling, to me
Ooh, I like
anyway.
that.
Is there an influence from that genre? I think you said you didn't play a lot of games, so it's usually more Doom related.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff I play is yeah, there's a lot of Doom related stuff, or at least it was back then. But I like that comparison to survival horror, because survival horror is a genre quite I'm in that awkward position where I like it as a concept and I'm terrible at it. You know, I'm just too much of a wuss. But what it's doing is fascinating to me because it's playing on a completely different axis to pretty much every single other game genre out there. And I find that fascinating, and I try to emulate that to some degree, although that's more in the general atmosphere and concept than the gameplay. Like I said before, gameplay is not my strong suit. I'm more interested in an overarching concept, or I suppose a gimmick, than I am about the you know, blow by blow combat that populates it. To some degree, it feels kind of like expected of me to put it in there. This is not always the case. I should hasten to add, like I do. There's quite a bit of combat that I put some thought into, but I'm all about the vibes. You know, I'm all about just like, what does this make you feel? That's how I look at it anyway.
I was curious what some of your favorite WoDs were, generally speaking, and then if there were any that you sort of enjoyed due to their sort of difficulty or challenge.
Oh, favorite WoDs. Oh, there's a laundry list. One like speaking of horror, one of the WoDs I very much enjoy is Nightomb by Eternal. If you haven't played that, I highly recommend it. It's one of his 2x2 maps where he uses only two flats and two textures, and you can't you honestly can't almost can't tell, because it's built in such a rock solid sort of way with a lot of atmosphere. He uses actually like he doesn't create sounds, but he has some sound effect makers in the maps at certain points, which I find quite cute. And yeah, the atmosphere, the music actually helps for that one a lot as well. So that the looping back to the whole thing about sound design. So there's that. Oh, this one will be interesting to talk about later on, I'm sure. But the Seventh Circle by Moldy from the first Nova. Massive inspiration, primarily because of the very, very cool library section. I'm sure you know exactly where I'm going with that one.
I think I do.
We can talk about that once we get to that part of the conversation later. Yeah. What else? What else? What else? What else? Someone has started doing their washing and it's distracting me. Sorry.
Motorbikes, helicopters, washing machines,
Yeah,
got it
good
all.
heavens. Just like the world knows that I'm trying to do something that requires things to be quiet. I'm sure the neighbor's gonna pull out his drum kit any moment now.
It's like the Truman Show, but they're trying to sabotage you.
He actually does own a drum kit. I wish I was joking.
Oh no.
Oh yeah, every now and again just for
Well,
like a good 45 minutes or so, it feels like.
maybe it'll
I
add
don't
to
mind.
the ambience, you know.
Yeah.
So, Countdown to Extinction. It's an entire mega WoD
yes.
made up of speedwraps, made in 1 hour. Can you talk a bit about the process of creating that many maps that quickly, and how that process like evolved the more maps you made?
Well, that one's interesting. The funny thing about Countdown to Extinction is that, like, yeah, each map is made in an hour's time. And the thing you'll notice as soon as you start playing is that a lot of the maps are very, very gimmick oriented. Because, like, seeing as it was a small map, I could indulge a particular random idea without having to expand on it too much and include like other ancillary combat, which is, I think, you know, what gave me the drive to make 32 of the bastards. That was a good time though. That was back in 2013, I believe. And I think was it over about a month? It was over about a month. I made like at least one map a day, sometimes two or three. I'm starting to wonder, I think I may have been inspired a little bit by Chorus's speedy shit, but with a bit more consideration for for the rest of my schedule, I suppose. Because the stuff he made was, oof, jeez. How did he have time to like get up and take off his pajamas?
And were
Yeah.
there sort of any particular challenges making that many maps that
You
quickly?
do eventually run out of ideas. There are some maps that are less inspired than others. I freely admit that. So, yeah. I don't do that sort of thing anymore. You know, when you get an idea, you want to give it some breathing room. You don't just want to chuck them all into one map set and then just be stuck on the bloomin' be stuck in the stocks of obligation, as it
I think it can be good though
were, trying to
to
get to
do that
that
kind of
32.
thing.
Yeah, like it's good to get out of your comfort zone every now and again.
Yeah, but I think it can also like force you to create, you know, sparks of ideas, you know.
Yeah, sometimes it can.
And
And
then
now I'm
maybe
thinking
you
about
can
those
sort of
maps as
pull them
well, because like
out.
some of the stuff in there is quite good. Mainly the library maps. Noticing a pattern?
I have yeah,
That's
wood and bookshelves seem to definitely be
yeah.
your major wheelhouse, I
Yeah,
feel.
mostly just bookshelves. The wood thing was it was a one-time thing. But yeah. Yeah, like I was talking about the Seventh Circle by Moldy, like a very prominent library section that I quite enjoyed. I think there's also just the fact that, you know, I've always loved the concept of, you know, secret passages and libraries and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Always been big on that sort of stuff.
I
So,
would one day
yeah.
like to have a secret passage behind a bookshelf in my house. That would be
Oh, same. I don't even know what I'd store in there. I just want it.
Just a fridge behind it.
It's just a very ornate fridge.
You
It's
never
where
put
I keep
anything
my
in it because it's
sarsaparilla.
just too much work.
Oh, God, I love that idea. Oh, jeez. You think you're going to go into a secret passageway, find some dark secrets, and no, it's just beer.
Yeah, just prosciutto or, you know, some sandwich ingredients.
Yeah. Oh, excellent.
Can you talk a little bit about the Mayhem community projects and sort of the ideas behind those early installments?
Ah, mayhem. Well, first off, got to shout out the original mayhem master, the Myonic Donut, for starting it way back in 2012. Got to shout them out because it's an excellent project. I'm glad that they started it because I started contributing in 2013 with the sort of like the two monster version. I was mean and did Archviles and Pain Elementals.
Of course.
And yeah, I contributed to like all of the mayhems leading up to 2016, where I know that TMD bowed out and Markek took over for that year, and I was also just going through some stuff that year, so I didn't really contribute. And then yeah, in 2018, Markek stepped down, and they needed someone to step up, and I figured, heck with it, I might as well, because yeah, running that sort of thing is. Not many people can do it.
Yeah.
I imagine there's plenty of people who think they can, but it is a lot of work coordinating resources,
Yep.
making sure that mappers are still engaged with the project, and of course, all the compiling and bug fixing afterwards. It is a lot of work, and more importantly, it's a lot of very boring work. You need to have a very specific mindset in order to do that sort of compiling work, that sort of managerial work.
Yeah, I agree.
Which thankfully I can do. I did some volunteer data entry in 2017, and so long as I was allowed to have music, loved it. You need to have that specific sort of mindset in order to be good at running projects. And thankfully, I think I have that. In 2018, I started doing that. And of course, considering this is me, the first mayhem I did, very dhat heavy. Had no reason to be. It just was. And like. The product the end result turned out good, but I think that was more on the part of the mappers than the DHAC stuff. It's
Right.
still a good map set though, two map sets even. So
Yeah, for
it's
sure.
still good. Yeah. In
What
20
would you say
oh sorry.
makes like what makes for a good community project, do you think? And what are some key things someone should look for, to do when hosting one?
I think there needs to be a good core idea, first of all. You know, you need to have something compelling for people to do. Otherwise, you know, no one's going to show any interest. A good community project, yeah, need solid core premise. You need to make sure that you're attentive to what people are asking about. Even if it's to say, no, I can't do that, make sure that they know they're being listened to. Make sure you keep that engagement up. Otherwise, people will get bored and wander off. And of course, the most important thing, make sure you deliver the end product and timely manner.
Yeah.
You might be able to hear me gritting my teeth.
It is common for community projects to not come out in a timely manner, so.
It sometimes, yeah.
Or not
yeah,
at all.
sometimes the world conspires against you. The world conspired against Mayhem an awful lot. I know those projects, like, the majority of them took a bit of time to come out. So they certainly did when it came to me, although in 2020 and this year, I think the turnaround was pretty okay. It certainly was for 2020. That was like a month and a bit, and then that was fully compiled. But yeah, you want to make sure you stay on top of things. You got to manage your time properly. You know, if you don't think you can make that time commitment to get everything out there, then don't, because people are relying on you to get their work out there. Like, people put time and effort into the things they did for your project, and the least you can do is make sure that they can show their work to the world as soon as possible.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely one of the more important aspects of it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, Maskim Zol, a really cool little project.
Yes.
I love that the player like starts out with these dual pistols sort of ready to go in the first map, and then you spend the entirety of it sort of walking around, hitting switches in a spaceship, doing little puzzles. I thought that was like a there's something fun about that as like a pacing element. You like to sort of mess with player expectations a little bit when you make maps?
Funnily enough, that was an accident.
Right.
It's just that some source ports do that. If you start the player with no bullets, which I did,
mm-hmm.
I would have had it so you just start with a fist out. But then I would have had to change around the order of the weapons. I didn't really want to do that. So that is a side effect. I do like how that interpretation is there, though. I wouldn't take that away from anyone. As for expectations, I do like to try and. Keep people on their toes a fair bit. It's something I did in Masking Zul and some of the more interesting pieces. There's that one bit that everyone remembers from Masking Zul. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, right?
You might have to be more specific.
So it's late in the map before you go into the boss map.
Okay.
It's for one of is it the blue crystal key or is it after the blue crystal key door? It's the area that turns 90 degrees every time you press a switch.
That one. Oh, right, yeah.
That one I quite enjoy simply because it's something that just isn't done in Doom.
Yeah.
The closest I can think of that predates Masking Zol, I found about this after the fact, is a piece of Plutonia 2 map 11.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why this bit is in here, probably just because, but I believe it was Thomas van der Velden who did it, because this is very much his wheelhouse. There's an area that's very much, it's you're in the same room but at different angles, and you navigate it thusly, and it's pretty cool. But considering it's for vanilla, it doesn't have the illusion of actually turning. It's more just a fun little set piece.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, when I got to do it, I didn't have that idea in mind. I was just like, that would actually be really cool to do. Can I do it? Oh my god, I can do it. It's going to take a buttload of work, but I can do it.
Well, those are always the best ideas, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I am not afraid to commit to a bit in a map. Even if it takes an incredibly long amount of time and is incredibly tedious to do, I will commit to it. If you look at the map for Masking Zol, or Masking Zol Map 2, I suppose, you'll see that that area is made four times in different angles. It's just...
Yeah.
Silent teleporting everywhere, and like textures that were on the walls are now on the floors, and all that sort of thing. Took a while to make, but very worth it for the results that I got from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And what was sort of the general inspiration for that project?
Definitely that library part of The Seventh Circle by Moldy.
Right.
Like, yeah. I can cite that bit pretty almost that bit exclusively. For inspiring me to make Masking Zol when I started it in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not just that it's a library bit, it's got those aspects to library maps that I absolutely love. All the moving architecture now, so clever. And if there's anything I absolutely love in a map, it's a map that does clever things.
Yep.
So that is very that was very much the impetus, shall we say, for me creating Masking Zol all the way back in 2014.
I really enjoyed the final map as well, that ward with the Mancubus sound used, the way it is for like the giant beast in the ward. Did you sort of have?
Oh, are you talking about the ambient sound? It has a bit of like the Mancubus death sound mixed into it.
Yeah, it
I
does.
stole that sound from Nidhoofn
Yeah, that sound.
Yeah.
Did you have like the entire WoD's like little story, I guess, planned out from the beginning, or did it kind of just evolve as you made the maps?
It did kind of just evolve as the map progressed. There was never a big focus on story. It was like I said, atmosphere. Very big on the atmosphere going into it. It was built entirely on vibes and gimmicks. So there was never like a huge focus on the story. I just wanted like a big Shub-Niggurath sort of boss that you fight at the end, and a map with a lot of bookcases, a lot of clever stuff, and of course a lot of dehacked and archfiles. The archfiles. Oh, so many archfiles.
Can't go wrong.
Can't go wrong with archfiles. Well, some people say you could.
They're wrong. They're incorrect.
Oh, I don't know. They might be on something. Let's be completely fair. There's a video by you familiar with the YouTuber, I think Icarus something or other? He reviews a lot of he reviews a lot of Doom maps and WoDs, and he did not like Masking Zul, and honestly, totally fair. Like it is an experience that is very, very self-indulgent, and that is very like the bit where he gave up is the part where it's probably it's most visible. Is there's one last area before the boss, and it's filled with nothing but archfiles. Like, oh God, I could open a bloomin' map editor right now and count the archfiles. I'm kind of tempted to do that. Hold on, because there's so many of them. There is an amount that can only be described as gratuitous, and it is purely self-indulgent on my part. I just want a lot of archfiles there, and so I did it because no one stopped me.
Well, I think the vile rush has become definitely in like slaughter stuff. It's become a big trope unto its own, really, these days.
Yeah, I'm not gonna say it. I'm not gonna claim it or anything. But yeah, like, yeah, there's another example of keeping players on their toes, I suppose. Let's count the art. Give it a moment, it's gonna load up. Thank goodness we're not doing videos or anything like that.
There we go. We're
So,
about to find out.
okay, here we go. So
Number
this here
three
is there's
drawn.
there a bunch of them, there's a bunch of them that teleport in, isn't there? Hold on, it's been a while. So you got about three here, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11. There's about 15 already in there, and then I think there's a bunch that teleport in later.
We got a live count going.
Yep. And then how many here? I think these all teleport into there. There's about 24, so almost 40 archfiles in that one space. Bear in mind that like a lot of the maps I make are somewhat claustrophobic,
That seems like a reasonable amount to me. Seems
yeah.
totally fine.
Enough for you to sink your teeth into. Jeez Louise. Oh, the
We.
memories, they're overwhelming. I remember where I was living when I built some of these bits, you know?
Yeah.
I remember some of the music I was listening to. I was just like, I can look at this part of the map and go, hey, I was listening to Push It by Static X when I was making that. Neat.
Definitely have that with music and podcasts and things. Like sometimes I'll remember what conversation was occurring in a podcast I was listening to or something when I'm making stuff.
It's a fun, unique experience, you know, like just like looking back on something and just having that little capsule of time, just like, oh, I was doing that whenever that was happening.
Yeah, exactly. We talked about atmosphere and ambience quite a bit so far on the podcast. And you sort of, I feel like you create a lot of tension in your words more so than other people. Do you think that tension is something you'd like to see a bit more of from Doom words in general, rather than just sort of
Oh,
straight into fast pace combat?
definitely. I would love to see more people plumb that sort of atmospheric aspect of maps and in building tension. I think even outside of the whole atmosphere horror, tension has its place. Like you could build an entire map on tension, and someone did. I believe it's like map 12 of TNT Revolution. You just toying with those emotions that aren't just visceral joy. It just does so much for a gameplay experience. So yeah, big fan of tension. construe that as you wish.
Well, Sandy Peterson, I think he said that he liked to sort of integrate tension into his maps, maybe a bit more than the other id people. And I think the original Doom definitely has like a good mixture of, like, you know, very fast paced maps and then more tense, sort of slower paced stuff. So,
yep, including the map getting too tense. And I guess this is kind of obvious as well, but yeah, the Spirit World is definitely one of my it is definitely my favorite Doom 2 map. I can say that pretty confidently. Combination of, like, just the very surreal sort of atmosphere, the decent amount of archfiles, and of course the very, very good music. Like, that map was one of the ones I always came back to. Like, I suppose it's no surprise that I tried remaking it. Maybe I should try that again someday, you know?
Yeah.
Could be cool.
I think it's probably one of my favorites as well, actually.
Mm. Just all the elements come together very, very well.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have worked with a heavy metal MIDI. It just wouldn't have.
No, definitely not. So you've talked about this as well, playing with dehacked and custom sprites and things like that. And you try to create things that are, like, sort of add a unique flavor to the world, I guess. Does a project need to have some sort of unique theming or gimmick to interest you then, do you feel like?
Good question. Really, I'm turning into the gimmick guy, aren't I? But yeah, I think I will say it's very telling that when I see a map set, I almost instantly walk to map 30 to see what the boss looks like. There's my little secret shame. I enjoy seeing what people do with the original Icon of Sin idea, or if they just decide to do something completely new. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I get my fair share of disappointments, but every now and again I get something that's like, oh, that is clever. I think, yeah. Part of this, that is another motorbike going by and completely derailing my train of thought. Sorry.
And now I have to leave in the previous motorbike to inform people about this motorbike.
We're building lore.
Exactly.
Quick, tell me to say some things that you can use to pay. Some exaggerated sounds to put in there instead.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, hold on. Train of thought. Yeah, I said, I am very gimmick. There being a strong, like, central idea to a map set in order for it to engage. Like, people can put out mega wads until the cows come home. But if the ideas behind that aren't all that inspired, then, you know, I wouldn't be inspired to play through it all.
Yeah.
I think one of the better mega wads in that sense is Going Down, because that has an incredibly strong central premise and it delivers on it.
Yeah.
Heck, I helped Moldy make the final boss for that. He didn't quite go for the idea I had, but, you know, that's how things shake out sometimes, and that's perfectly okay. But yeah, the central idea is just very strong in that one. And that's why people remember it.
Yeah, I think that's true. Well, Moldy's one of the better ones of, like, crafting, like, a story through sort of mapping detail and environment, yeah, and stuff, for sure.
Yeah. I feel like if he turned his hand, it's like trying to make, like actively making horror-oriented experiences. There's bits and pieces of that in Going Down. Map 26 in particular is incredibly good in that. And I think, I want to say map 8? Yeah, map 8. If he really puts, like, if he puts, like, a megawatt's worth of effort into that, it makes something truly special, at least to me.
I think.
Fun fact,
Oh, no, you go.
Fun fact, I actually reached out to Moldy, like, in the middle of Masking Zool development when, like, progress was a bit stalling, and I asked him if he wanted to help out, but he said that he was trying to gravitate away from giant maps and make smaller ones, mm-hmm, and, yeah, that his schedule didn't really allow, which is totally fine.
He did become quite busy.
Yeah. Lately. Yeah. Well, that's life for you, getting in the way of the important stuff.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your love of vanilla Doom 2 textures. You seem to use them a lot, and I'm wondering sort of what your reasoning is for loving those vanilla textures.
Can't be asked using custom resources sometimes.
Fair enough.
I don't know if I'd say I have a love for Doom 2 textures, but, like, there's always that sort of familiarity. You can't get away from that. As of late, like, A good example of this would be Mayhem 2020, where you have those sort of remixes of vanilla textures. And it was about that year that I like really started playing around with the idea of composites as well, just like recombining stock resources to make new things. I guess there's some sort of allure in the familiar used in an unfamiliar way. Mechadon is a good example of that. Mechadon was another really big inspiration for me making Masking Zool. I've said this before in other places, but like I would look at his big maps and I would just be completely dumbfounded how he made that sort of thing. And that's what I tried to emulate with Masking Zool. It only took 3 years.
Yeah, Mechadon's use of vanilla textures is inspiring,
Impeccable,
I
yeah.
think. Yeah.
Yeah. So a bit of that might have something to do with me using them so much, but a lot of the times it's just, if I'm speed mapping, then I'm not pulling up a resource pack for it. I'm just working with what I have there.
Yeah, right.
So that would probably explain that. I don't really have a preference towards like vanilla Doom 2. If anything, I like Plutonia textures a little bit more, but it's just what I tend to use a lot because it's simple. It's there already.
Yeah,
It's
definitely.
why I
There
make
is
so much
something
boom
freeing
stuff.
about
Yeah.
not having any resources to work with, I think.
Yeah. It's why I make so much. It's why I've made a lot of stuff a boom as well, just because it's kind of, my go-to. It's simple. It's familiar. It's not too restrictive, but it's not so, wide open that you're left paralyzed by indecision. You just sort of do your thing in it. I'm trying to get away from it a little bit more. Like, I think my New Year's resolution will be to map for eternity more or something like that. But yeah.
Yeah,
But it's just a case of, you work with what works for you. You work with what you're familiar
I was a little curious why you hadn't sort of moved into sort of more Z Doom oriented stuff, considering your sort of penchant for dehacked and ambient sound and all these sort of features.
I will say that, like, when I started out, when I started getting into custom content, I was very much hanging around the Z Doom side of things. Funnily enough, in the conversation I had with Crunchynut, the source port he recommended me was Skulltag. And this was when Xandrenum existed. So
Right.
Skulltag was proper dead by then. I don't know why he recommended it to me. Probably because he hadn't done Doom stuff in a while, and it was what he used at, like, before he stopped doing it. So I did start with like Z-Doomy stuff, and then I gravitated more towards the vanilla side of things because, restriction breeds creativity. That
It's
one I'm
true.
going to harp on quite a bit because, like, I think the premier example is Silent Hill, and that whole thing about the fog being implemented because it disguised the bad draw distance on the PS1. Something like that, like, you can do so many cool things within those restrictions. Knee-Deep Knee, very good example. Like a lot of the compromises that got made for that project would honestly just turn into upside. And you like and like I played through it in its entirety, and like it feels Z Doom-y. It nails that feel. Also, playing good. I tried playing through Knee Deep and Z Doom a while to like compare, and it's just like, oh jeez Louise. It's a clunky matriarch fornicator, shall we say? Not quite my style of gameplay, and Knee Deep and Z Doom a lot for that regard, while still working within those restrictions. You can do so many cool things when you like. I guess that's what drew me to speed mapping to some degree, those guidelines. It's just because we have given you these parameters to work in. What are you going to do with them? And everyone has their own different answer to that question, and it's compelling. That's probably why I stuck with speed mapping for as long as I did. Because like it's imposing that limitation on yourself and then seeing what you can create within it. And oftentimes it's more compelling than if you don't have those limitations.
I think definitely in the case of community projects as well, it's good to like have that initial idea or restriction or whatever it is, just to I mean, A, that's sort of what ropes people in initially, I think. But also it helps newer mappers, I think, work within some constraints so they're not like you said earlier, like paralyzed by choice, I guess.
Helps to nip magnum opus syndrome in the bud as well.
I feel like that was definitely a thing, maybe not so much these days, but back in the day, you used to get a lot of community projects where people were like, Well, I have to make my map really, really long in order for it to be good. And so you
Yeah.
just get like 40-minute maps back to back kind of thing.
Yeah. But that might be like, I wouldn't say there's a direct reason why, but I think 4, which very much had that going on, and the fact that it has actually been 10 years and Community S5 is not a thing. Beyond the fact that, like, the Green Herring has got their own life going on, like, I wouldn't begrudge them that, but just the idea of community chest is kind of fallen by the wayside because, like, people are doing these new projects and they have these restrictions. And where was I going with this train of thought? I knew I was going somewhere.
Something community chest related.
I was thinking of community chest and how, like, because that very much did have that. I think the best example is Looping's Casman's two maps that he did for that, which feel like they should be their own standalone release, frankly. They're just, and not just in comparison to the rest of the stuff, they are just downright impressive.
To get us back to sort of your own personal projects. Tink is one of your more oppressive map sets, I think.
Oh yes, I remember Tink. Those were speed maps, I remember that specifically, and yeah, they were solo releases at first, and then I decided to collate them into their own map set, their similar vibe. The whole Tink thing, I was just looking for a unifying thing to call it or theme it around, and I just decided to go with that because it was cute. I also liked all the MIDIs for that project were also Zanzan Zalvea MIDIs because I had downloaded a folder full of their work, and it was really offbeat and interesting, and I wanted to make stuff with them. I need to do more work. Like, I don't think I. Did I map with those MIDI specifically in mind? That's something I more of just like picking music and then mapping around it because oftentimes it's the opposite. And that can be a little bit galling because you have a specific idea in mind when you're making a map, and sometimes the music you find just doesn't match it. That's something I could have done for Whistle Spoonie sessions, mapping around music. But anyway, yeah. That was a fun little project. Someone nominated that for a CAC award, which I'll always find quite chuckle worthy because, like, it's a fine little project, but it's not worthy.
I think it was one of my favorite things of yours that I played, probably, actually. I think.
Oh, thank you.
I thought it was really good, yeah.
Yeah,
Or just all
I
the
could
little
probably.
puzzles and stuff. Like the
Yeah.
gameplay on UV is kind of brutal though for people who maybe don't play sort of as much challenging Doom stuff, but I
Yeah,
enjoyed
I'll be
it.
honest. I don't think that those maps had difficulty settings. So,
Well, UV only then, I'm afraid.
yeah, it's
So
my way or the highway, and there's a blockade.
yeah, did feel that way at
Yeah,
times.
that was a fun little that was a fun little map.
Yeah, if you like sort of small, very compact, like puzzly maps, semi-puzzly maps anyway, then you'll probably enjoy that one, I think.
Yeah, I'm a fan of those sorts of compact. There's a map I made in 2017 as Skinny Man, which is it is completely a concept map. There's like no pretenses whatsoever. There's no traditional gameplay. It's all just these little ideas that I've strung together. And fun fact, a bit of that map is literally architecture taken from Mask and Gazool. I took this one area, copied and pasted it, and then built an entirely different map around it. It was just a funny exercise. I was plagiarizing myself. Yeah,
Yeah, I like that kind of repurposing.
I should do that a little bit more. Well, maybe, maybe. And
So,
that map was just quite fun to make. I take it you're
sorry, what was that? You cut off a little bit.
not... Oh, sorry. New Zealand internet. Nah. But I do find it interesting that you didn't actually bring. Were you planning on bringing up Skinny Man later on, or was Rita.
I didn't actually have it on my list of topics, but if you'd like to talk about it, then go ahead.
Yeah, it is literally just like a cute little sort of puzzly sort of thing. I did just I can't really talk about it without spoiling the ideas that I did for honestly, you can find there's a gameplay video out there and stuff like that, but like it really is just something you got to play for yourself. I do remember making Alfonso just dread that Masking Zool was going to be just like it. So I consider that a victory.
Yeah,
It's
terrifying people with your maps always a good.
it's very atmosphere oriented, and the puzzle, I guess it's that sort of thing of just like if something's easy to you, it might not necessarily be people. So it may take a while to just sort of grok what's going on. And I imagine that's the experience Alfonso had. Wish I could have watched him play it.
Yeah, that's always fun. Especially with puzzly stuff. So, I mean, I guess this is sort of related, but some of your progression can be a little bit obscure in your wards. Do you tend to plan out a lot of your progression initially, or does that kind of just come together as you build the map?
Yeah, it's like I said, freeform jazz. I'm making, if things come together in a way that I find pleasing, then I don't really plan out an awful lot of what I do. I plan out some general ideas, and the map itself just sort of takes form.
Right.
So progression is always going to be a bit of a bag of stuff, I'm afraid. I refuse to improve. No.
What's sort of your starting process then when you're building a map? Like, are you just drawing shapes and then kind of connecting stuff together, or do you generally have some idea of what you want to do?
Well, first things first, I always remember the wisdom of the man of Tarns. Don't start with a square.
Right.
I remember, yeah, there was like some that was something that Tarnsman said, because if you start with a square, it kind of just, funnily enough, it sort of you sort of map yourself into a corner. You've got a square. What the heck do you do with it? What is compelling about this shape? What can you do with it? Which makes total sense. And so what I do is I basically make sort of like a weird cubist Texas every time I start a map. Just a shape that ideas can grow out of. Because like I make the initial shape and then I add more shapes on, and things just evolve from there. I find that's a good way to start. Just you draw a compelling enough shape that ideas will just naturally form from.
Yeah, I do think starting with just a square or a circle, which I mean, I do it sometimes myself, but I suppose the problem with them is they don't lead you anywhere when you're
Yeah.
mapping.
Your
Like,
possibilities are at the same time nothing.
yeah, because you could build off any side, and then it
Yeah,
doesn't really help you
it
like
could be anything, and then
going
it
down
just
an
becomes
avenue. Yeah,
it's
the problem.
a problem.
So what was your inspiration for the black and white theme of Candlemas?
Ah, Candlemas. That was inspired by the, I believe, was released around
Inspired by what, sorry?
the monochrome mapping project, or
Oh yeah.
monochromatic mapping project. Old project, cool idea, just needed a bit more oversight to become to realize its potential, because it was a bit of a mash. I know it was, it spanned multiple source ports. I believe GGG Mork submitted a Zedoom map for it. A whole bunch of people did boom maps, that sort of thing. With a bit of, with some good leadership, that idea could have some legs, but I'll leave that for someone else. But I made the final map for that, and considering it was 2013, and I was still getting the sea legs, as it were, it's a bit clunky. So yeah, and when did I start Candlemas? 2019 or 2018? Might have been 19. And it was very much, yeah, predicated on that sort of that sort of color scheme. And from there, I just indulged different little ideas. There's the bit with the mirrors and such that I found quite cool, which you could get away with because of how plain the textures were. So it was kind of perfect. There was an idea that I saw in, funnily enough, it's an idea that Essel in Knee Deep, Knee Deep in Zedoom, and that one iconic shot from the CAC Awards page. The idea that comes from a WOD made many, many years ago. It's called McPherson.WOD, and it's a demonstration of all these vanilla tricks you can do using textures and the like. And that's where I got my idea, and I had the idea of like reflected sprites and all that sort of thing. Took some work and eventually got it done and was quite happy with it. But yeah, that's where the idea initially came from, and then I sort of did my own thing.
And what were sort of the challenges of working with a purely black and white palette?
Your shadow work, your shadow work becomes incredibly important. If you it, that with those sorts of stark colors, there's a chance that everything is just sort of going bleed into each other if you don't do your lighting well enough. And it's something I actually made a little bit of fun of, because one of the secrets in the map is a wall with a switch, and a label says press this button to go blind instantly. And when you press it, you pick up the lighting goggles.
Yeah.
And the whole map becomes ugly as sin. I had a good long chuckle when I made that.
Yeah, having worked with Pure White myself, I've seen people turn on the old full bright during being in that area, and it you can't really do much. I'll say that.
Yeah. The effect is somewhat ruined in base Cheesy Doom, because, like, for some reason, the default of that is to make it look like actual light amp goggles. Everything's tinted green.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But what can you do, eh?
I'm not sure about the decision to make light amp goggles into night vision.
Actual, like, yeah, night vision goggles. That's the...
Yeah.
It feels like something that shouldn't be switched on, but that is a different conversation.
I'm curious if you toyed with, like, having a custom... like a set of custom paladin monsters for that one at any point, Candlemass?
Not really. Literally kind of makes custom paladin monsters for me. I don't know how far you've gotten into the map, but like there's a bit after you pick up the key where you go into... This was an idea I actually recycled from my monochrome mapping project submission. Mm-hmm. I found out that if you use the... someone's starting their car. I found out that if you use, if you have a sky floor and you transfer the sky floor to like a white texture, but you have the lighting on that particular sector completely dark, every single thing that's on there is in full black, despite the fact that the floor's bright. And so that's kind of how I did that, without actually messing with the monsters themselves.
Yeah.
It's a cool little concept that I hadn't seen anyone do before, so I...
Right, yeah, and I guess that wouldn't work if you sort of had gone and made everything custom paletted to match.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the juxtaposition like makes them that bit much more effective.
Yeah, exactly. So Zaza's Dead Air seems like it's sort of very compatible with your mapping sensibilities, so it makes sense that you wanted to make a tribute ward called Deceased Cable with Fuzzbear.
Funnily enough, that one's more of a tribute to predecessor to that, Dead Wire, hence the name. Dead Air is something like, this is actually something I discussed in the thread. Dead Air is something I find kind of, but I was just a little bit, I felt like the end of that kind of bit, and I think that was an accident on Zaza's part. For some reason, yeah, you've got no fighting like cyber demons that shoot homing rockets. Like, what do you think's going to happen?
Right.
But yeah, Deceased Cable. Yeah, that one was born from me doing Abyssal Speed Map Edition 54, which was in April, and so for the April Fool's idea, I figured we could use Deadwire assets and have all the monsters be, you know, Spectre, and have that Spectre shading on them.
Mm-hmm.
I called it Dead Ass, because of course I did.
So what did you enjoy about sort of Deadwire specifically then? Was it the atmospheric kind of quality to it?
It is. Definitely the atmosphere. The atmosphere does so much work in that map. Same for Dead Air, actually, at least in up the finale. Mm-hmm. But the atmosphere of it, and it's a simple concept that hadn't been... It's a simple concept done exceedingly well. You know, it's something that, you know, I'm surprised people didn't really do much earlier. But the only thing I can think of that's comparable is Mars Doom. Having semi-transparent imps in it. And that's about it. No one's ever tried that idea of just having every monster be like that, or almost everyone, anyway.
Right.
So it's a simple concept done very well and very atmospheric, and that's what drew me to it, and that's what gave birth to Dead Ass and eventually Deceased Cable. Because, like, Dead Ass... Ass 54, the 54th Visual Speed Mappings.
Yeah.
It turned out pretty good, but I felt like it didn't utilize the resources as much as I would have liked, which is not a slight against any of the mappers. Like, you're mapping in 2 hours. You're going to the idea. And so, yeah, to celebrate moving to a new place, I did some streams and made deceased cable within those streams, for the most part anyway. I had to do some tinkering off stream to make sure it was all nice and polished.
Right, yeah. Cheating.
And it turns out quite good. Beg pardon?
A little bit of cheating.
Oh. Who's going to judge me? God? His sins are far more numerous than I.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if God's ever claimed to have made a map fully on stream and then touched it up afterwards. That's a pretty big
story. Hey, I told people I touched it up afterwards. This isn't speed mapping. This is just me doing.
That's
fun. Also, I love the insinuation that whatever God's sins are, they are not worse than that.
Yeah, definitely not.
Blasphemy! Cast him from the high cliff.
Exactly.
Why am I Skeletor? Back to.
We've got to get back on track. Skeletor, yes, will have to wait.
Yeah.
So you're still hosting Mayhem, I believe, mm-hmm. As well as a number of other community projects. I'm curious.
Too much at the moment. There's Mayhem, and then there's Maximum Project. That's about it.
Oh, it's just the two. Okay.
Yeah, it was just the two, thankfully.
Well, you said you had something in 2023 to look out for, and I was wondering if you had any sort of big projects on your own.
I have a couple of things simmering away. One of them is a personal project. Some community efforts that are hopefully going to come to light next year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that with the Abyssal Smear sessions out of the way, you know, that month-long obligation, I should have more time to focus on personal stuff. Sort of clear my plate, as it were, you know, just not have these obligations hanging over my head. That'll be nice.
Yeah.
There's always going to be something that needs doing because no one else can do it. But if I can clear at least some of these things, I'll be able to just sort of chill. That'll be nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I feel like it always just helps the creativity when you don't have to worry about a whole bunch of other obligations.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I started mapping for right after I finished the Doomworld Max project stuff and most of the Abyssal Speed Magician stuff. Oh, yes, Abyssal Speed Magician 69. All three compilations are finally out.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go.
Get them at your local retailer for $9.99.
Wow. I don't know you're making money off
Sorry.
That. Unbelievable.
Freeze is now on us.
So, what is the final question that I ask everybody on this podcast? What is your favorite Doom monster and why?
Archvile.
Okay, well.
That one was kind of obvious. But
shit of the game.
I've got a couple of reasons, so it's not just like a one-note answer.
Mm-hmm.
There is the unique like slant that it gives to combat. There's the sort of horror element that comes with it reanimating monsters, which is why I don't quite care for its later iterations where it just summons them. It has a lot less impact. Reanimating is so much cooler. And of course, the story behind its sound design, the whole thing of just like the evil laugh to as its wake up sound, and the whole thing about, do you know the story about the death sound for the Archfire?
It's like a little girl saying hello backwards or something, isn't it?
As far as, from what I understand, it's a little girl saying it shifted and then repeated a couple times.
Saying why? Was that it, sorry?
Yeah, why?
Yeah.
I think the official explanation is that, like, the kill, because it's just being helpful. I think that's what I read for.
Sorry, what was the official explanation?
The official explanation is that the Archvile screams why as it dies, because it doesn't know why it's being killed. It's just being good, you know, getting monsters back up on their feet.
He's a medic. Doomguy's a war criminal. He's killing medics on the field.
Yeah, the rudeness, my dude. I always loved that explanation. I don't know exactly.
Yeah.
But it's very, very, it paints the character of the Archvile in a very interesting way, and that, like, that's why I like the Archvile.
That's interesting. Well, we've had Archvile a number of times as the answer, but never for those exact reasons. Definitely very unique reasons for liking the Archvile, which is interesting.
Thank you.
And very befitting of the kind of wads you make, I think, that it focuses more on the, I don't know, the story, if you will, of the Archvile than necessarily the combat elements.
A Boy and His Archvile, coming 2024. No.
Yeah, look out for that. Obsidian's Mega Wood, A Boy and His Archvile.
Don't hype it up, jeez. Don't give the public false hope.
Coming very soon, actually.
I still need to get out Masking Zool harder.
Exactly, yeah.
It's coming out 2025. No.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. It was a pleasure. And very interesting to hear about all of these. Some of the older WoDs that you maybe were struggling to get your memory working for.
I remember them. I remember them.
But yeah, it was very interesting. So thanks again.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me on. It was a good convo.
Yeah, it was great. And yeah, thanks everyone for listening. And I will return next week with another guest. So yeah.
Ciao.
Goodbye.